Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Glad you're with us today for another interesting program. I probably should insert the word that started to be in my mind until I've kind of censored it out of that, and that was an interesting program, but actually probably a lively program. Want to remind you that Central Coast Voices wants to bring you valid and vital information about our community and things going on. Today's choices may affect how tomorrow's community works and vice versa. We are going to look at something from a probably more historical perspective today, not from a Central Coast standpoint historical perspective, but maybe from a theater perspective. We're going to talk about Shakespeare on the Central Coast today. Since about 1990, the Central Coast Shakespeare Festival has been committed to providing professional entertainment and productions of Shakespeare's work along with other timeless theater stories. And we will discuss what that translates into. That it's a Shakespeare festival, but not all Shakespeare. They provide local artists with an opportunity to work alongside visiting professionals and committed community volunteers to deliver a powerful theater experience. I can tell you, having been, probably for full disclosure, having been a volunteer in a non-theatrical and non-production capacity, I believe most of the people from Central Coast Shakespeare appreciate the fact that I do not do anything theatrical for them. It doesn't fit within my genre, and they would agree that that should probably be the way it stays. Anyway, part of their mission is really to nurture evolving theater and evolving theater audiences when they present live theater in an outdoor setting, and we'll get into where that is and how it's gone and what the evolution of that has been. My guests today are Zoe Saba, and she is the artistic director for the Central Coast Shakespeare Festival. Cindy Totten, who is a longtime artist and director of this year's one of this year's productions, As You Like It. And Kelly McCleary, who is the marketing representative for Central Coast Shakespeare Festival. And also, we get to tie an interesting side into that, and that is she is also the liaison with the festival for Filippone Ranch and Winery, where they do most of what they're going to do for us, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. I'm a little leery about giving out the phone number because knowing that there are a whole bunch of Shakespearean actors that probably should be working today to get things done for the final professional planning because the Shakespeare Festival opens tonight, I'm going to give out the phone number. That's 805-781-3875, 781-3875. This is a call-in program. We are a public radio station, and you are the public. And yes, that may today include some people involved in the production, but hopefully some of my guests will warn me as to who they are if they happen to call in. Anyway, but you're welcome to be part of the discussion, even if you are not currently involved in Shakespeare. It has been both easy to produce this week's program and very amusing because dealing with people that I have dealt with before and also realizing that my view of Shakespeare and the Central Coast Shakespeare Festival may be different than a lot of folks. I actually look at the Central Coast Shakespeare Festival as some version in my mind of conventional serious Shakespeare meets Monty Python. And I cleared with my guests as to whether or not they were going to throw me out of the room if I said that. And the comment back from Zoe was something along the lines of, do you see that as a problem? So that I was very relieved. My blood pressure went down. So I don't know where we start. The history of an evolution of doing Shakespeare on the Central Coast, I think, is really important. Can we go back to what happened in about 1990?
Yeah, sure. The festival was started by a theater company called Artemis, a theater company. That was their official name. And it was run by Dr. Patricia Troxell, who is an English professor at Cal Poly, and two other women who began Artemis, and then included Shakespeare as a summer program. They did lots of plays during the regular year, and then in the summer they produced Shakespeare. And that was produced on the Cal Poly campus at the Ornamental Horticulture Arboretum.
Would we want to say they produced exclusively serious Shakespeare?
Well, they didn't exclusively produce Shakespeare. Okay. They did lots of different types of theater, and they did Shakespeare in the summertime.
Okay. I guess I probably need to explain my view of Monty Python and Shakespeare. I was surprised at the and I don't remember which production it was first, but the first time I went to one of your productions, which is close to 20 years ago now, and realized that you were doing real Shakespeare, but you were doing it very shifted out of period. And that first time I saw that was probably close to 20 years ago. Last year, one of your productions was certainly not set in a Shakespearean era or even the era of the production. It was set in World War II.
Yes.
Okay. I think a lot of people might find that to be unusual. A lot of people might find that to be refreshing. A lot of people might just find that to be bewildering. So I'm wondering how that has evolved.
Well, I think it's a long tradition of everyone doing Shakespeare plays that they set it where they believe the setting can speak to whatever the theme of the play is about that might emphasize that theme or illuminate that theme in some way. So it's not something that we invented. It's many, many theater companies for many, many years do this to Shakespeare plays.
You could have told me you invented it and I would have believed
yeah,
that.
Right. Well, you might be, and some listeners might be happy to hear that our first production that opens tonight, As You Like It, directed by Dr. Cindy Totten, is set in ye old Elizabethan times. So no twist on the setting of our opening production this year.
Cindy, did you decide to stay conventional, if you will, for a particular reason?
You know, I absolutely love this play, As You Like It. This is the fourth time I've directed this play, so I obviously love it. I've never been able to think about a different time period to put this particular play in that seems to speak to the universal questions that are asked about love and brotherhood, redemption, forgiveness, freedom. I always feel like it's very Shakespearean, and the Elizabethan times seems to be the place where it's at most at home, at least in my view of it. I'm sure other people have done it differently. The other thing is we haven't done one traditionally for quite a while, so it's kind of lovely to go back and bring that aspect again to this production and also to the festival.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing the fact of the table that you haven't done one in some time that's been in a conventional Elizabethan background. Because I was scratching my head and going back through some of my notes about, gee, when was the last time that was one that was actually played in period? And I couldn't find it. I'm thinking, like, what did I lose track of? So that's good to know. Have you always done it as a traditional production?
Yes, I have. This play is so rich. It's so full of drama. Oddly enough, at the very beginning, Shakespeare packs so much information into the first half of the play. It's got more plot points going on than any of his other plays. And it runs at kind of a breakneck pace at the very beginning. And it starts out almost as a drama, but then it shifts into this beautiful pastoral comedy, romantic comedy, as characters flee the oppression of the courts, and they are either banished or flee into this magical forest of Arden. And they find freedom, they find love, they find each other, they find their true selves, and they find nature, and their own human nature, too. So I think this play has such richness to it that in and of itself, it gives everyone opportunity to find something in it. And Shakespeare titled it As You Like It. And there's a little bit of background on it. Part of it might have been because he said, okay, these will be like my other comedies. It's like Midsummer. This is the way my audiences like this. It could also be you'll find different things in it. You can like as much of this play as please you, one of the characters says towards the end. And there'll be something for everyone in this play. If you like drama, if you like romance, if you like comedy, if you like good storytelling. And I think that's one of the things that Shakespeare does best, is gathers us all around this old, old art of wanting to gather around almost a campfire and listen to a beautiful story that makes us feel less alone. And that we are, and what's lovely about being on the ranch is all of our plays begin in daylight. The first half of our plays pretty much are in the bright, beautiful sunshine. And then by the end, we get to see the sun set and the darkness gather. The stage glows like a campfire. And you see the beautiful sun, the beautiful sunset, and the stars then come out, and the moon might come out, and you can hear owls, you can hear everything in nature, and it's as if we are gathered together to hear beautiful universal stories.
The thing that I have heard sometimes from people who have not been to Shakespeare locally, or in some cases not been to Shakespeare at all, and maybe they've been and not stayed with it at some point, is that they often feel like Shakespeare, if you haven't read the story in advance, the Cliff Note version doesn't give you enough information to really follow Shakespeare for a lot of people. I've actually had people say, well, you know, they've appreciated the humor in Shakespeare or appreciated the era shift that we already talked about. Because it kind of takes them away from the fact that sometimes they feel like they leave a Shakespearean production without a really good understanding of storyline.
And one of the things we really work for is clarity of that storyline. We make Shakespeare accessible to the audiences, and not only so that you can understand. It's the first time we're hearing it. It takes audiences about 10 minutes to adjust to any play that happens. The very beginning of a play, everyone's listening, and we never want to leave audiences behind. We want to make sure the actors, the characters know exactly what they're saying, and that they have action and physicality, and that they take us with them on this journey. The other thing about it is Shakespeare's very physical. Shakespeare has sword fights. People get kissed, they get killed, they run into the forest.
They fall off things.
They fall off things. Things fall on them. A bear eats one of them. So there's all kinds of action, and I think what we do honors that sense of physicality, that sense of there's dance, there's song, there's swashbuckling, along with cheek by jowl, every human emotion. You can be laughing one moment, and the next moment something heartbreaking happens, just like in life. Mm-hmm. So we want it all on the same plate. And I think something that people feel like when they come to Shakespeare is, oh, it's a wall of words. It's intimidating if I look at it on the page. And, oh, Shakespeare's not for me. I won't understand it. And I think the key is unlocking it so it's not just a wall of words. It never was during Shakespeare's time. Even if some of the language might seem antiquated to us, we might not get every single reference. What happens is we let things, if we can let things wash over us, and through watching the story, the physicality, the movements, the honest emotions that the characters are experiencing, we follow the story. And people have told us after performances, they say, that sounded so conversational. That sounded so like casual speaking. I had an actor say to me the other day, there's a line in the play that says, and we're handling our sheep and their fells, meaning their wool, is, you know, greasy. And the actor said, did Shakespeare really write, you know, greasy? I said, yes. Okay. So there's a lot more of conversational things in Shakespeare than I think we have a misconception that it'll be too hard for us. And I personally never thought Shakespeare was for me. I had, in my education, I had professors who thought Shakespeare was only for certain people, and it seemed to be none of us that she was teaching, unfortunately. And I always kind of felt like Shakespeare wasn't for me, I guess. And until I came here, and this is my 19th season,
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, and I would, I want to just follow up on what you said about our audiences responding to the sort of conversational nature of the work that we do. And we work very hard in rehearsal to accomplish that and make sure we all know what we're saying and to tell the story. And I would invite anyone who is feeling like you mentioned that they didn't understand Shakespeare before or they fear they will not understand it, I would invite them to please come and give it a chance and see what happens out on the ranch with what we do with the shows. And I think they might have a really great time.
As an audience member, for this, one of the things that you seem to do, and I will have, based on the fact I've lived on the Central Coast for 30 plus years, most of the Shakespeare I've seen has been put on by you. So I don't have a lot of history of Shakespeare in a larger theater environment. So I don't know if this is a common thing for Shakespeare's era, or it's something that you have latched onto or is used often in smaller environments or outside environments. And that is, I'm surprised at the number of lines that we would think in a production would be directed towards other cast members that kind of get the, I started a gesture to do it, but I realize we're on radio, it doesn't help. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the actors have turned to the audience, given the audience a line that may be, easiest way to describe it is, the dweeb next to me who should understand this isn't. Do you as the audience understand what I'm talking about? Was that something that Shakespeare did in at the time of his, when he was alive?
Yeah. Well,
or is that a reasonably conventional way of looking at it?
So yes, and that's a great observation on your part. So, and sometimes the things that you're referring to are called asides, an aside. So we believe that this was common practice. That's what scholars believe, and they talk about triangulation in Shakespeare. So you're talking to other characters, you're talking to gods, or you're talking to the audience. So this is the sort of symbiotic nature of the storytelling. You're getting the audience on your side, perhaps, if you are the evil character and you're going to divulge the plot that you are going to begin to put into motion, like the beginning of perhaps some people are familiar with Richard III, right? Now is the winter of our discontent. He starts telling the audience what's going on right now and what he plans to do about it. So it's sort of that theater is this really particular art where it doesn't really exist without an audience. It requires an audience for the final element, the most vital element of that energy circle between the actors telling the story and the audience's hearing of that and reaction to that. And so that's part of the nature of that direct address or breaking the fourth wall or asides directed at the audience, because we're there together creating this story this particular night.
For those of you who may just be joining us now, we're talking about Shakespeare on the Central Coast and the Central Coast Shakespeare Festival, which kicks off their 2018 season tonight, which also means that most of the people in the room with me have something better to be doing with their Thursday afternoon. So I thank them for being able to be with us today, because they indeed are starting their production tonight. Anyway, I want to remind you that this is a conversation you can be part of, but by joining them at the theater, and we'll give you more information about that also, or by joining the discussion now if you'd like. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. I want to get back to the point of an aside, because and I'm old enough I may lose track of when it was. I'm not sure if it was last year or the year before that you actually had in one of the productions, someone left the stage and drove off in a vehicle.
Yes.
Okay. Which was startling for Shakespeare.
Well, we did last summer for the first time ever in the history of the festival, we did a contemporary play, Almost Maine. And it was a series of couples in Northern Maine, in an imaginary town called Almost, who were having encounters about love at the same magic hour of 9 o'clock on a Friday night. And one of the scenarios or vignettes was a husband and wife who were trying so hard to recapture the love they felt when they were first together, but life was getting in the way, and they were out skating and trying to have fun, only for it to turn into a reckoning that their marriage was probably over. And the play has a lot of sort of magical qualities that happen, and it's also tied to the Northern Lights and the sense of when the Northern Lights, phenomenon has to do with the vibration of molecules in the air of some kind, and it shakes things up. And so all the characters are shaken up when the Northern Lights appear at this magic hour of 9 o'clock. And so magical things happened in each scenario. In this case, because of the location on the Filippone Ranch, because there's a sort of back road, wouldn't it be wonderful if she has to go back and forth to her car, the wife does, and then she actually leaves him and stomps off. She takes the keys and she leaves him, and in these stage directions we hear a car start. Well, we had her car, so she would get into it.
The car really started. It was startling. Yes.
And she turned the lights on and drove off, and you could see her drive off in the distance. The audience was like, oh, what? And it struck a chord and a nerve with people. I don't know how many people have driven away from each other or wanted to, but I think it really vibrated through the audience too. And to have that sense of magical realism in a way that in the outdoor space we could have a character stomp off, get in a car and drive away and leave her husband.
Yeah, it was an incredibly good production, and it was a startling moment. Because I just figured, okay, this person's going to step off stage, mm-hmm. be out of the purview, and that's the end of it. And all of a sudden, we indeed hear a car start up, and it's like, we hope it's not coming our way.
Well, and I think moments like that are moments that only theater can offer, and specifically only moments of outdoor theater can offer.
Which brings up an interesting point, and that is that let's make sure we don't lose track of the fact that it is outdoor theater, which probably brings Kelly into the discussion, because Filippone Ranch has been involved now for 5 years. So your involvement with Shakespeare went beyond that and still goes beyond that, but you're kind of the Shakespeare Festival liaison also to the ranch operation and the winery, which it has turned into an incredible opportunity. I guess we can say this in hindsight, for an awful lot of people who come to Shakespeare, it's a shorter drive than the previous venue you were at, and more convenient. So how did that come about?
Well, about 7 years ago, one of the Shakespeare actors was a mutual friend, and he let us know that Shakespeare Festival was looking for possibly a new home. The one in Paso Robles, I think they'd been there for about 5 years, and I think there were more and more conflicts with weddings and other events. And so we started just having a conversation and explored the possibility of moving Shakespeare to the Filippone Ranch. And at the time, we had a couple of spots that would work. Zoe came out, we looked at them, got a sense of what might be possible. At the time, we had another winery leasing part of the property, and so we had to just kind of navigate through that and figure out where best to have Shakespeare. And it turned out that the venue where we are was preferred. It's much larger, has great parking, it's got a beautiful entrance. Once you've parked up above, you can just walk down this path and you see the stage and the trees behind it, and it's a beautiful, you know, entrance into the space. So after a couple of years of talking about it, we committed, we started planning, and we made it happen. So the Filipponis are thrilled because it gets people down the road onto their ranch. It's a little bit tricky to find if you haven't been there.
It's only hard once.
It's
easy off the freeway to get there and very close to town in San Luis.
That's for sure, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So once you know how to get there, it's very easy. And it is very close. It's convenient for probably the whole county. South County is close as well. So, we're on our fifth year.
And it's a couple of things that you've added this year that are hopefully pleasant surprises that work out. As far as music and some on-site food?
Yes. So the past few years, we've had Piemonte's Deli doing little antipasto platters, and they do these delicious desserts. They bring brownies that are infused with Syrah from Filippone Ranch Wines. They have cannoli. They bring lemon bars, just delicious. So you can have a little snack during intermission. And this year, we were approached by Beta's Beer Garden. They wanted to also offer food. And since Piemonte's is closed on Sundays anyway, we just kind of worked out a deal where they each get two different nights. So Beta's Beer Garden will be there on Friday nights and Sunday nights. And Piemonte's is there Thursdays and Saturdays. So we'll have different offerings on different nights. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Beta's Beer Garden, they do German fare, hearty stews, sliders. He's bringing the pretzels with, I think it's a mustard sauce. So really interesting menu. And keep you warm on a cool Friday night. And then the music, that kind of came about because Oregon Shakespeare, and I imagine other Shakespeare productions, sometimes do what's called a green show before the plays. And that at Oregon Shakespeare, it's outside, and it's just a free little show. People gather around before they go into the theaters. And so because Friday nights tend to be smaller audiences, we thought, let's do something extra. Maybe we'll get people to show up. They don't have to worry about food. They can just show up and get entertained before the production. So I lined up music for there's four Friday nights. And so this Friday we've got the Taproots, which is Tom Walters and Nico Cass doing acoustic Americana. So that'll happen. The door opens at 6 p.m.
6 p.m., yes.
The music will be 6:45 to 7:15, so it's a relatively short set, but it gets people in. They can purchase their wine and their food and just enjoy a little music while they're waiting for the show to start.
Yeah. For clarification, we may want to remind folks that while there's some needed legal control over alcohol because it's on a winery property, people can still bring their own food if they want to bring a picnic or whatever they want.
Yes, absolutely. We encourage people to bring their own picnic. That's always been part of the fun of going to outdoor theater.
Yeah.
And because it is on a winery premise, we can't allow outside alcohol. But Filippone wines are available for sale.
And delicious.
And very good. So how do you decide what you're going to produce in a given year?
Well,
that came with a bit of a deer in headlights look.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's always sort of a conundrum, you know, as a producer, I would say we're thinking about what might be popular. There's a limited number of plays to choose from the Shakespeare canon. And within that limited number, there are a limited number of plays that are real comedies that people have heard of and might want to come see. But on the other hand, we want to produce things that get us interested and that we're excited about spending a good deal of our lives with. And so in thinking about what story strikes us as interesting in the moment, really. So it's a combination of that, and then also if it's a non-Shakespeare play, just what comes to the surface, you know, what sort of things are on our minds or on the horizon. The Almost Main came about, I think, because we were just sort of restless for something different that year, and we thought about Our Town, which I think is a favorite play of Cindy's and a favorite of mine as well. But it had just been produced, I think, by Slow Little Theater or Slow Rep recently, and so that led us to Almost Main because it has some similarities in the short vignette storytelling process of it. We look at other classic stories. We've produced Cyrano de Bergerac. We're doing Three Musketeers this year.
And this isn't the first time for Three Musketeers.
No. I think 12 years ago. I think about 12 years ago, yeah. So.
Yeah, that was a pleasant surprise to see Three Musketeers on the choices. My hunch, as a non-theater person but a spectator, is that Three Musketeers seems to be one that you can get an awful lot of people out who may not go to what we would consider to be a theater of that era, that have seen it because everybody has seen at least one of 17,000 versions of the movie. But it plays well, and its level of humor seems to work well for a non-Shakespearean oriented audience, I think, in some cases.
Yes, I think you're exactly right. And I think it has a lot of Shakespearean sensibilities about it. You know, the sort of larger than life characters, the broad humor, the heightened emotions. It fits well with the
Are you doing it in era this mm-hmm. time or
mm-hmm. Oh yes, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the events of the story take place 1625.
Okay. I just didn't, having not seen it, obviously, this year, because you're opening tonight, I wasn't sure whether or not you had decided to create some...
For Three Musketeers, we're 16. There will be yards and yards and yards of costumes on the stage. There will be dozens and dozens and dozens of buttons and glitter and ribbon.
are most of your cast members... Obviously, some of them are students. Mm-hmm. Some of them may be professional mm-hmm. Artisans. Where do you find most of the people you work with? Because I know in the case of both of you, neither Cindy or Zoe, you don't live locally here. Mm-hmm. So this is a summer getaway for you, and it may be for some of your actors too. Or local students?
Well, mostly we hold auditions here in San Luis Obispo, and we also, for the past several years, have been holding auditions at PCPA, and we also take video submissions. So the casting's another sort of mysterious process.
We have an hour of radio. I'd like some of the mysteries addressed.
If I can chime in here,
yes, please.
I think that we have had people return year after year to the festival, and we've actually seen people who started out in high school grow up in the mm-hmm. festival, or even younger than that, mm-hmm. Who've been with us. So people who've been part of the CCSF family often come back to audition again. They might not come back every single year. They might not be able to for various reasons. And I'm still amazed that we've had such sort of longevity, not only for the festival itself, but also with our company members who have returned, with mm-hmm. people who also will get other people to come and audition because of their experience with the festival, that they've had a good experience, and they say, hey, friend, you should come out and audition. Why don't you come join us? So I think word of mouth. Also, local high schools and local colleges and people who are new to the area have come to audition. People who've been trained in theater are people who've been away from theater for a while and then come back mm-hmm. to it. So we
and
have, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and that when you were talking about people having a good experience, we call them our alumni, basically, we offer a unique opportunity for actors here, and they're doing true repertory where the majority of the company is cast in two plays. So they're playing a minimum of two roles, sometimes three or four roles, simultaneously rehearsing and then rotating their performance repertory. So it's a big challenge for an actor. It's a great way to work all those muscles of an actor, and no other place offers them that sort of workout.
As you were saying that, I had to kind of snicker because it occurred to me that I would probably mistakenly throw out a line from As You Like It in the middle of Three Musketeers and say, oh, okay, I'm getting too old for this.
No, that's okay. You'd be surrounded by other professional actors who would save you.
And or kick me off the edge of the stage, as the case may be.
And I'm sure in Shakespeare's time, too, because they were going, mm-hmm. they were
constant,
learning.
Everything was really in repertoire.
It was in repertoire, too. And so I'm sure at times actors would probably insert a line from another who am I tonight? Am I Richard III? Am I, you know?
And that's, I just would like to add that that's an opportunity for audiences too as well. They don't, they come see a show, they have an opportunity to see a company of actors working their craft. So they may come this weekend to see As You Like It, and they could join us one of the future weekends in the run and see that same actor in a completely different play. You know, really see the versatility and the talent level of this company of actors that we have together this year.
Yeah, the we haven't talked a lot about the logistics of or the physical venue and how it's set up. Indeed, you have a wonderful spot on the property where you really have a natural amphitheater. I would say you can easily hold. I don't know if you have a maximum capacity, but in my mind, you can easily hold 200 to 250 people there and not have anybody feel like they're losing sight of what's going on. It's a small venue with enough space and enough parameters of the half circle to have room for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you're right about your estimate. We've had a bit over 200 there before, and I think it could hold 250 people. But it's not too large to have a bad seat. It's large enough to hold that many people, but it's also intimate enough that there's not really a bad seat in the house.
No, that's true. And there are some people I have seen. We have noticed a number of people who come early because they always want to spot about two-thirds of the way back on a given spot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or they come early because they always want to be in the front row.
Yes.
And what I refer to them as the beach blanket crowd.
Yes.
That was the front row. But it's also a wonderful family. Wonderful family experience, but it's a wonderful family as a spectator. We have seen people there multiple years, like, oh, haven't seen you since last year at Shakespeare, and things like that that come up. So the logistics of putting together a production in an outside venue that in a good year got rained on very heavily. I realize we're in the middle of a six-plus-year drought, so it's probably stayed reasonably dry for you folks there. How much prep work has it taken every year to make that venue usable for theater?
Well, this year it took a lot from having a
let me fill in one.
Okay, yeah.
The ranch, one of the great things about our move to the Philipponte Ranch is their complete willingness and ability to understand the needs of live theater. Because once again, you're absolutely correct in your observation. Theater's a particular art for many reasons, and one of those reasons is it's very labor intensive, human labor intensive. It can't be done remotely. And so being able to leave storage on site, to build on site, to have access to the site in the weeks before we begin technical rehearsals and add the actors to the process is just such a great blessing for the flow of the work that has to be done. And the ranch has also been just steadily making improvements as we grow each year.
Yeah, the trail gets better every time.
The trail is fantastic. And can I say, electricity?
Yes.
No generator this year. Yeah. We've had fabulous luck with a wonderful generator that's provided our power.
Yeah.
But the ranch has now provided actual electricity that we just plug into for our lights and sound and the trail lights and the audience lights. So it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah, it does work very well. And one of my observations as a audience member there is that it is delightful the way when you get to the parking lot, you can still hear the freeway, you can still see the freeway, and there's this nice little wandering trail. It's not a very long trail. It's maybe 100 yards down. I'm not quite sure how it acts. It's not like having to walk a quarter or a half a mile to get there. It's an easy trail, but once you get down in the basin of the theater, it's actually very remarkably quiet for the fact that it's only a little over a half mile to the freeway from where you are. It's worked very well. I think I hope the plan is to stay there for a long time.
We hope so too. And I think this year without the generator, people will be able to sit further up in the bowl. And in fact, we've done a lot of weed whacking, and we've got some extra bark chips that are going up there. So we have capacity, I think, for an even larger audience, and I think it's going to be so beautiful with the quiet.
It's already been great during the Tech Week nights this week. Just we'll be sitting and watching the run or something, and then we'll just turn to each other and go, listen, nothing but language and actors.
And the occasional owl.
Yes.
And I hadn't, I'm glad you, because I had not remembered the fact that you had a generator there, because you kind of, you tune it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure we'll notice the quiet this year without having that around.
Yes, it was pretty far back behind the stage. And you do, once you get in and things are happening, you tune it out. But to not have it there, it's noticeable. Yeah, it's just brilliantly quiet. In fact, I didn't put the flags down the path this year because when it's windy, they shake so much. I was like, I think those flags will be too loud without the generator.
Interesting concept from that standpoint.
Yeah. So, okay.
So you audition a cast.
Mm-hmm.
You decide how early in the process what you're going to put on.
Oh, before auditions.
Okay.
Before auditions are scheduled, yes. Yeah, we
probably by December. At least to decide on the what the plays
December
are.
Maybe early January. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Cindy, you and Zoe are both professors of theater.
Yes.
So that means by nature you are probably very detail oriented on theater on a daily basis in your life. I realize that. I'm wondering whether or not there are these constant tapes in your head playing. I've just seen a new production of a certain play, and this would be very good for us at Shakespeare. Or this would be a very good, last year when you did a contemporary, a really contemporary production for the first time, I'm wondering how that kind of selection gets made.
I think it comes from both of us loving plays and reading plays, seeing plays, reading advertisements and reviews about new works and thinking, oh, that might fit in. So we constantly share what we're finding out or send information or articles to each other throughout the year because I just love plays and I just like to read them, and I'm always thinking where could we do this play if we fall in love with something? Would it work outdoors? Also, there's new work coming out that that might speak to us. And there's, I know Zoe goes every year to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and sees productions there, some of which are new works. And the idea of, well, perhaps, I mean, that's how the Three Musketeers script came about, because it's by artists from...
Three actors from OSF wrote or the adaptation of The Three Musketeers, Douglas
Lanworthy. So it's not the original or an original script.
It's based on the Dumas story,
okay.
But it is adapted by the three actors from OSF. And when we produced it 12 years ago, it had not yet been published. But it has since been published by PlayScripts.
I'm thinking, as you're saying that it would be fascinating to see a new production, but I think that's also got to be, my thought is expensive, because something that's in public domain or all you need to pay is licensing for actual use of script is probably less expensive to the festival than a new play for someone who's entitled to make a living producing a play or writing a play.
Well, anything we do pay royalties, and they vary for what for non-musicals. They vary from 80 to 125 or so a performance, if you are granted rights to produce the play. So it's not a terrible expense, really. Would you?
I think that's accurate, and of course Shakespeare's in the public domain, so there's not a royalty fee there. However, we talk about this every year. We think, oh, this will be easier to do. For some reason, we are deluded that we think, oh, this play will be easier to do than this other play, and that's never true. It's never true. No matter what production we do, there are always new challenges. There are always new discoveries and new insights and new problem-solving things we have to create. Like, oh, how do we make this particular prop? How do we find these particular costumes? How do we stage this moment where this thing happens? What furniture do we need? What do we have in storage? What costumes do we have? What do we need to augment that with? We comb the thrift stores, and we bring home treasures, and
we have a fantastic production designer and lighting designer for the past couple years named Andrew Hammer, who's made this beautiful fire prop for us this year. Oh, so we're excited about the fire prop, and he's built some beautiful lantern props for us for Three Musketeers.
Yeah, and going through the notes that you provided for me to do some. To put together my notes for this program, one of the things that was mentioned is that there's a misconception among some people that a Shakespeare festival and Ren Faire are somehow the same thing or somehow tied together. This is indeed a theater production that anyone can show up in conventional street clothes and not feel out of place.
Absolutely.
However, some people have street clothes that we want to question. Sorry. The minute I said that, I realized I should have left that alone.
I think that's part of the beauty of the outdoor space is it's very casual. It's very – I keep saying the word forgiving because people are eating and they're sitting on blankets or their low back or high back chairs that they bring. It's a picnic festival atmosphere. There's music playing, whether it's the live music that we'll have on Friday nights or we've got pre-show music playing through the speakers. The actors will be doing their fight calls and their dance calls, and that just means they rehearse the physical parts of it before they do the actual show. So actors will be warming up on stage, and audiences who come early can see that. We had some actors running laps around the place as a warm up, and so it's a very casual atmosphere that the audience should feel comfortable to come as they are and to bring layers of clothing in case a night might turn a bit cool, so that they need to bring chairs or blankets.
Yeah, bring a blanket. Stay warm.
And there's layers, yes. Even here we need layers, yes.
There's an accessibility, I think, to the theater experience when you watch it outdoors. You're not expected to sit still and behave well or something. You know, some people have a misconception about being in theater.
I want to interject as an audience member. I do expect you to be quiet.
Yes.
Pay attention.
It is on occasion we have asked people sitting near us to you can explain the entire play to your kids afterwards. Please do not spend the entire play doing it.
And actors will walk through the audience and talk directly to them and sometimes take their food. So there's a lot of interaction. It's very informal.
Yeah, and you really feel like you're in it. Cindy was saying, sometimes actors will be warming up their voices just up on the hill before the show starts or before the play starts. We've got half a dozen of the actors in the wine bar, literally, waiting to go through the audience and get up on stage. So you're just more in it and of it at this venue.
Yeah, as we've talked about that, it occurred to me that, and I want to mention this, that the fact that there are no walls other than whatever the stage facade is a refreshing change. I mean, even we love the acoustics at the Performing Arts Center, love the acoustics at Vina Robles, but there is a lot of structure in places like that. And this is, it's a primitive setting, and that's primitive in a good sense of the word. It's a simple setting, and I think that's worked very effectively. So I hope you stay there. Your previous venue was closer drive for me, but I'm glad to drive into San Luis for this one.
It's
a lot better. Yeah.
Thank you.
And we'll probably remind people about this, but I want to make sure we don't forget. The production starts tonight. And what is on tonight?
As You Like
It. As You Like It. Okay.
Starting at 7:30 p.m.
Okay. And it's done in repertory, so both plays will – it's not like As You Like It is playing on specific nights of the week. They're in rotation enough that if you can only come on a Thursday, you have a chance to see both plays. And the same would be true of a Sunday matinee?
Correct. There. So we'll open As You Like It this weekend. It will play Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Mm-hmm. Then we begin teching The Three Musketeers on Sunday, and it will open a week from tonight and play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then we begin the rep rotation, and As You Like It will be back on the boards a week from Sunday. So if you even came for the weekend, you could see one show on Saturday night and a different show on Sunday.
That would be in 2 weeks.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
But,
yes.
Well, next weekend.
Oh, next
Not
weekend.
Not this weekend, but next
yes.
weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
Next
right.
weekend. That's good to know. And we've been doing this for 27 years?
The Shakespeare Festival has existed under someone's charge since about 1990. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there is a website?
There is. CentralCoastShakespeare.org.
Okay. And which also I remind people often, and that is if you don't remember that particular website, it's amazing what Google will find you. I believe if you just type the word Shakespeare and San Luis Obispo, you won't have trouble finding it from that standpoint, and that would be very helpful. This is probably not available to anyone this year, but it occurred to me that we may want to suggest for some folks that if they have an interest to be involved in this in a theatrical role, in a technical role for a coming year, when do you start talking to those folks?
Today.
Today, well, I don't know. Today, do you have time today?
Today. We always have time if people want to work on the festival.
Okay. We do have, let me see, we've got, let's see. Okay, Bill, you're on the phone, or on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to ask something you haven't covered. Is the venue handicapped accessible?
So we have assisted parking. It is a dirt road, so, I mean, it's still a little rustic. But if you do need assistance in parking and getting to the stage area, the greeter at the top of the hill will direct you down the hill. Instead of parking up above and having to walk down that path, they'll direct you down to just to the left of the backstage. We do have ADA, the larger porta potties, and we can help get you to the stage. It's very flat at that point.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks for the question, Bill. And I'm sorry we didn't bring that up before and mention that, but thank
yes.
you. Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. And we want to remind people, we've talked about Philipponi Ranch. Okay. For those of us who have been there, we know where it is. We probably need to make sure that we're real clear about how people can find it.
So Los Osos Valley Road exit off of Highway 101, just south of San Luis Obispo. You'll go west on Los Osos Valley Road, and you will then take the light there, turning left onto Calle Joaquin, and just follow that road around. You'll be going kind of southwest past the hotels, and then you'll go up the hill toward KSBY and Mountain Brook Church. Just follow those signs, and once you get to the top of the hill, you'll be at the ranch, and there'll be people to help you direct you to park.
That's a good point. If you know where
Mountain Brook Church,
if you know where KSBY is, if you know where the Spirit Nightclub used to be.
You can
find it all.
The Spirit,
yes. And as most of our listeners know, I try and make sure I get out of the way for at least a few minutes at the end of the program. So, Cindy, let me start with you. Can you share with us what you really want to make sure we don't forget about this experience?
Well, I think for As You Like It, it's almost like a Midsummer Night's daydream. It happens, lovers running into the forest, trying to find each other, the follies of love, and the course of true love never running smooth. This play has the most couples getting married of any Shakespeare play. Four couples unite, and the goddess of marriage comes down to bless them. So it's all about love in the forest. And I think it'll be something for everyone. It'll be As You Like It.
And I want to interject. This is, you have produced and directed this play personally how many times now?
This will be my fourth time doing this particular play. This will be my third time at the festival, and I also directed it once where I work back. I work at Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Great, thank you. Kelly, what do you want to make sure people don't forget in the next few minutes so they can come out and visit you guys?
Well, we welcome you to Philipponi Ranch. Please wear comfortable shoes, bring blankets, bring chairs, low back or high back. We'll just ask you to sit in a particular, you know, either close up in your low back or blankets and a little bit further with your high back chairs. We can take credit cards for wine and food. So be prepared to enjoy some wonderful food from Pimonti's or Beta's Beer Garden. We'll have wine available for purchase by the bottle and the glass. This year we do have Govino glasses again, yay. Mm-hmm. And be prepared to enjoy the wonderful ambiance at the ranch without the generator this year.
And I have time, so I want to interject. Children are welcome, and
yes,
children are encouraged, and the material in most cases, if it's mature enough that it may be something you would not want your children to understand, my observation would be they're likely to not understand.
Right. It goes over their head. If they're
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Zoe.
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess I want to say that this is a really beautiful, unique setting. And it's a beautiful, unique opportunity to hear some incredibly interesting, fun, funny, and heartfelt stories. To see a community, an ensemble of actors working at the top of their game and bringing such heart and soul and talent to each of these plays. And to come see some live theater. I think even if you in the past haven't enjoyed a theater experience or haven't enjoyed Shakespeare, I invite you to give us a try, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. And to come support local arts and artists, and to drink delicious wine, and to hear some beautiful music, and see some great stories.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been great talking about Shakespeare. It's been great talking about this with people that I have had the ability and the pleasure of working with as a volunteer. It's a great program. If you haven't been there before, give it a try at least once. I can assure you, you'll be back many times. I want to remind you that next week, Chris Kinkin-Barker will be with you, and she's going to speak with Jeremy Dimming, who's the CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of North County, and Megan Harris, who's the Director of Operations. And they'll be discussing issues about how they strive to provide high-quality programs throughout the summer and the school year, both an academic and social environment for local children in North County. The Boys and Girls Club has been doing this for over 22 years. It's a fascinating program for some kids in the North County. It is one of the most critical social functions and academic support functions they get in a community that can always use more of those, but that's a part of what they'll be doing. And I'll remind you that Central Coast Voices is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County, along with KCBX. We produce a report every 3 years on understanding San Luis Obispo County. The report is available at actionslo.org. For this program, if you'd like to suggest or give us feedback, you can reach us at voices@kcbx.org or 805-543-2323. I want to thank my guests today, Zoe Saba and Cindy Touton and Kelly McCleary, for putting on a wonderful program. And if you don't go to Shakespeare this year, you have made a serious mistake. Please be part of this program. You will be glad you did. And thanks for listening to Central Coast Voices. Thank you.